from Frankie's farewell, an international upset at the Breeders' Cup, and the race that stops a nation. It's all coming up on today's front page. Good morning and welcome to an edition of The Front Page with a real international flavour. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio by Maddie Plough and Lambourne correspondent Liam Head to talk all things Breeders' Cup. And there is only one place to start, and that is news of Frankie Dettori hanging up his saddle in the US, but going on a little bit of a victory lap in South America. Maddie, did this come as a surprise to you, the timing of it?
A little bit. I was wondering whether he kind of wanted to get it in there as the rest of the momentum behind the meeting was building and disappear slightly quietly. We heard in David Jennings' diaries how he was very elusive to get hold of to talk about it afterwards. But I think, you know, given the stage of the career that he's at now, he's had success in States, but I just think now is the time for him, perhaps.
And Liam, exciting plans to go and ride in Argentina and the like, that sort of caught me off guard.
Yeah, I think that was probably the surprising part, the fact that he was ending his time in America and his time in the saddle in America, but the farewell tour was continuing for a little bit longer. I think he's probably trying to just throw his name out there even more to different audiences as he can. And listen, if that's the way he wants to do it, then fair play to him. You know, he's going to these races that he's never competed in before, and we've probably not had a jockey of his calibre go to these races before, so it brings a bit more flavour to those races at the international level. Obviously, I think the Chilean Derby is the last one in February that he said that he's going to be his final swan song, so it adds a lot more excitement to it, I guess.
And every Racing Post reporter will be throwing their hat in the ring to cover the Chilean Derby. And just in the way that he's riding, it doesn't seem as though he's losing his powers or anything like that, but do you sense maybe he, in his own mind, feels as though he's not as sharp? Is this an ability thing, or is it just a timing thing?
No, I think, I mean, we've all been aware of his financial issues in the last couple of years. I mean, you look at the race he ran with Cardam at the Breeders' Cup, I thought that was a brilliant ride, and he rode him to win the Woodford before that. They were just a really good team. I don't think it's an ability thing. I think it's probably just the stage in life that he's at, and looking forward to a new challenge. Of course, he's going to be AMA Racing's global ambassador, whatever that entails. I'm sure we'll find out.
That was my next question. What do you think that will entail? Is it just a brand thing?
I presume it will be
a
visibility thing, following the horses around the world, building up excitement and enthusiasm for the game and the AMO horses, and just for all intents and purposes be a bit of a representative for that team.
And it's interesting, Liam, that he hasn't ridden in Britain for a while now, but he is still probably racing's biggest personality here, even. He seemed to capture the imagination out in the US. I mean, try and quantify the Frankie factor. It is quite something that he still is such a draw.
Yeah, he's blockbuster, isn't he? No matter what he does. I mean, I think it's just because he's been at the high level for so many years, and he's delivered time and time again when seemingly people write him off and think he's past it. He just comes and delivers an absolute blockbuster. I remember his final ride in Britain was King of Steel at Ascot and Champions there a few years ago. I mean, it kind of made the meeting itself. So I think he just draws that wow factor in, regardless of who he's riding and where he's riding. You know, he's kind of I was reading one of the articles the other day, he's the Lionel Messi of horse racing, the LeBron James of that sport. So I just think he brings that sort of power, the prowess of his sort of who he is as a person. He's just so good as a jockey, and he's done it for so long, and it's amazing that he still brings in the people that he does.
And as somebody who wrote a lot of words about his farewell tour in Britain and his retirement that then turned out not to be a retirement, I do just have in the back of my mind that he could perform another U-turn. There's something about it I can just see. Maddie, where do you stand? If you were pricing it up, is this the end, or do you think he might?
I think this is likely the end. I think just with the fact that he's made changes in his career recently, he has relocated and made that big move in his life, and he's mapped out exactly what he's going to do now. There's no ambiguity surrounding it. And, you know, there are lots of jockeys performing at the real top of the sport, they are, you know, it doesn't matter about their age, but you can't deny it, age catches up with us all. And yeah, I think he's probably ready for something different now.
And where does he rank, Liam, all time?
I think he's got to sit at the top, doesn't he? I mean, he's just, it's certainly in the top three in terms of the level of jockeys that we've seen, just for the longevity of what he's done. He's done it. He's won it all, like from when he won the seven races at Ascot all those years ago to still be doing it. All right, I guess that he probably thought America would go better than it has done. He probably would have thought he would have won a lot more races. Like Maddie said, I thought he gave Cardam a brilliant ride over the weekend. So that shows he's still a world-class jockey. If a trainer come Royal Ascot picks up the phone and offers a ride, is he going to say no?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, he did last year, yeah. And I think if he was going to, he would have done last year. I think for me as well, we know being a jockey, yes, it's about riding horses, but there's also so much politics involved, and we've been able to charter Frankie's problems very publicly throughout his career, and to overcome everything he has, I think says a lot about the character that he is, and we have a lot to be grateful for that he's been our sort of pin-up jockey for so long.
And if you are listening or watching from home, do get in touch and let us know who your idea of the greatest jockey of all time is. I'm going to go Frankie Dettori as well, just for that star power. We're now going to seamlessly segue, I do hope, from one big name to another. Willie Mullins was undoubtedly the story of that Breeders' Cup, winning with Ethical Diamond. Maddie, is there no end to this man's talent?
There just isn't, is there? This was one of the most bonkers performances I think I've seen in an awfully long time. You know, you're talking about a horse who finished fourth in a county hurdle, is winning a novice or maiden hurdle not so long ago, and okay, he's got the flat pedigrees by Ortad, who was a very, very good miler, but they thought, oh, we'll chuck him in there. It was David Casey's idea, allegedly, to go for the Breeders' Cup turf and hope to sneak some prize money with Absurd going down under for the Melbourne Cup, sort of juggling those two horses for the same owners. They got the drawn in the car park. They thought, oh, that's going to be quite tricky. And it was like he'd just drawn, you know, joined in. It was absolutely exceptional, the turn of foot he showed. Brilliant ride for Dylan Brown McMonagall as well. He's really coming of age. Obviously, he's just become champion jockey in Ireland. It just felt like everything came together. But if you'd have said to people a couple of months ago, this horse Ethical Diamond, who, to be fair, has always had a pretty tall reputation, is going to be Mini Hawk, Rebel's Romance, Goliath and all the other big hitters, I think people would think you were mad. But the way he did it was exceptional.
Yeah, no surprise then that Front Page viewers voted, 71% of our viewers voted that as the performance of the Breeders' Cup. Liam, you've done a nice piece charting Ethical Diamond's progression. In terms of that horse's career, it doesn't really come much more varied.
No, it's. I know that when they bought the horse, I think Harold Kirk was saying that he was bought to be a dual-purpose horse, but, I mean,
there's dual-purpose and there's dual-purpose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just, it's remarkable. Like, I was speaking to Kim Bailey yesterday, just I rang him up just to get a preview quote, and even he was baffled at the amazement of what we saw on from Willie Mullins and Ethical Diamond. I mean, this horse finished seventh in the Scottish Champion Hurdles, seven lengths behind the winner in April. Like, and then he goes and reels off a win at Royal Ascot, won the Ebor, and then a Breeders' Cup. Willie Mullins' first Breeders' Cup runner as well. I think he was sent off at 28 or 25-1. Mm. I think you could just see in the post-race interviews with Willie Mullins, you could see the shock in his eyes at what he'd just seen. I mean, I think he was just happy to be there and involved in the emotion of having a runner at such a big festival. And it's almost like he wasn't expecting the horse to finish anywhere.
Well, he said we just didn't want to embarrass ourselves.
Well, exactly.
He said we want to finish in the first five or six.
Yeah.
And then when he saw the draw, he thought this could be quite ugly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just think that you could see in his reaction, in his face, that even he couldn't predict what had happened. I mean, even by Willie Mullins' standards, that was quite remarkable what we've seen.
What do you do now, I wonder? Like, you've got a decent handicap hurdle, mark to play with if you want, but like,
festival.
You'd be more likely to go for something like the Shima Classic, I think. Why not? I mean, it's just the acceleration he showed was tremendous. And a word for good old Rebel's Romance in second. I mean, he was bidding to become the third horse to win that race. the first horse to win that race three times, never been done before, and he didn't have the best trip, got sort of locked in at one stage, and great that him and Notable Speech are going to stay in training too.
No, absolutely, we'll get on to that, but first, Dylan Brown, McMonagall. Maddie, you've touched on it. Liam, he's a jockey who's always been on our radar from quite an early age, as this might be the next big name in Irish racing and just European racing generally. It does feel as though this is the year that he's perhaps joined that top table. I mean, he's ridden big winners before, but it feels like a breakout year for him.
Yeah, well, you could say a breakout. I'd say the last 2 years. I mean, last year as well, he did win two Group 1s last year, obviously one of them being on Al Riffa. So I just think that he's slowly creeping into that level of being Mr. Reliable as well. I think it was a statement of intent from Mullins to select Dylan for the ride. And I was seeing an interview that the HRI did the other day with his father. I think it was yesterday on Sunday. And they just seem like such a humble family. You know, he know that they know where he's come from. He's been working hard to get to where he is. And you just don't know how high the ceiling is for him. He's still, I think he's 22, is he? I mean, he's got the world at his feet. I mean, if he continues at the level he's climbing, he could be around for the next 10, 15 years. I just think, I was looking at some of his stats before we came on here today. He's won over €3 million in prize money this year alone in Ireland. He's got 95 winners for the year in Ireland. He had 92 winners the year before that. I think the year before that he was in the 60s. So that level, to find 30 winners in the space of a year, like, is tremendous. And I think he's only going one way.
Makes you feel bloody old, doesn't it? 22 years
Let's
old.
Let's not get into that.
Yeah, I think he's without doubt an incredibly talented jockey. And it just shows you, if you want to be a top sportsman these days, the younger you start, the better chance you've got. I think he'll be Coolmore's number one. I think he's sort of being almost groomed for that role. And I think the fact that Ryan Moore's been out, Christophe Soumillon's resumed that position, he's going to get more chances on those, you know, second, third strings internationally as well. He's getting more awareness on the big stage. So, yeah, it's really exciting times for him.
I think as well, just to touch on the Frankie effect, I think Frankie's been such a pivotal role model for a lot of these younger jockeys coming through. And I think as well as the timing of the decision to sort of slowly walk away could be to the fact that there's a lot more younger talent coming through, and, you know, these younger jockeys have proven it on the big stage, so the opportunities might be going their way rather than to Frankie's.
Interesting. And in terms of proving it on the big stage, Aidan O'Brien's done that a long time ago. Just reflecting on his Breeders' Cup, he became the outright winning most trainer at the meeting, briefly. Would you say it was a successful meeting for him? He had a winner, but obviously Precise didn't run, Mini Hawk. He might have been a touch disappointed. I mean, such are the levels that he's reached that you would consider that a disappointing meeting, having a winner, but...
Yeah, I think the turf track at Del Mar is always tricky. And, you know, although Stad, he was given a brilliant ride and he had the form in that race, you're hostage to fortune in a lot of cases. You know, Aidan could do everything right and the cards just wouldn't fall his way. Precise, that was unfortunate. That was another thing. There was a lot of vet scratchings. I mean, she wasn't one. They said that she was coughing and there was an issue there. Of course, we had Sovereignty in the Breeders' Cup Classic as well with his temperature. But, you know, late on, there were quite a few White Barrio, even just as he was going to post. But, I think it was a success. Absolutely. Mini Hawk, I think she's probably just a bit over the top. She raced too keenly for me. She never really get in a good position, was stuck out wide a little bit. And when Christophe committed for home, there was a point where you knew that her juice was running out, I think, in the home stretch. But great that we're going to see her next year, and I wouldn't hold that against her going forward. She's quite a light framed filly, that was noted in the prelims, so maybe it was just one visit to the well too much and she'll be better with a winter under her belt.
And Gustad, what do you make of that for a performance? The win from that draw was quite something.
Yeah, and I think even Aidan said previously to the race that it was going to be a tough ask from that draw, but absolutely brilliant performance, and you kind of thought that if there was any doubt if Willie Mullins gonna have a good meeting, that they were kind of just ripped up with Gustad winning, or Stad as the, I know the
yeah,
G side.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah,
yeah. I just think that we thought, right, Aidan's going to kick on now. I think just by as we we talk about the greatness of Willie Mullins, the greatness of Aidan O'Brien. I think, judging by the ability and the classy horses he had at that meeting, I'd say he probably would be a little disappointed at how it actually ended with just the one winner. I think Precise probably would have won, maybe gone certainly close if she was able to take a chance. Obviously now,
and in winter ran well, I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think he probably needed a really good Breeders' Cup to break this record that he's chasing of you know, record group ones or grade ones in the calendar year. I think he's on, is he on 26 now? I think
26 records, 28.
20, yeah. So he needs two to equal it, and then three obviously to do it. So it's a tough ask now. We're in November.
All eyes on Hong Kong.
Yeah, Hong Kong. I'm thinking, has he got any? Is there anything else in Australia or something that he could possibly pick up? But I don't think that will be the plan. I'm trying to think what else there would be. Maybe one more in Japan, but again, I don't think he's got eyes on those targets. So yeah, Hong Kong could be the destination.
Yeah, but a phenomenal year for him. I'm going to also talk about another trainer who's had a phenomenal year, Francis Graffar, winning the filly and mare turf with Gazora. That's an ARC Champion Stakes, Breeders' Cup. I mean, is he the sort of trainer you can see challenging Aidan O'Brien and the like on the international stage more regularly?
I'm disgusted you don't read my Weekender column, because that's exactly what I suggested a couple
read
of weeks ago.
Read all about it in Maddie's Weekender column a couple of weeks ago.
No, I suggested it because I think he's got the firepower. We know that you need that backing. You know, Ballydoyle needs Coolmore. He's got the Aga Khan, the late Aga Khan, and all those bloodlines youngsters to rely on. And he's just a very professional trainer, isn't he? He's got a lot of experience internationally as well, which is helping him. And his record is speaking for itself at the moment. A lot of those horses are going to stay in training as well. I think he's definitely got what it takes to join the Aidan O'Briens, the John and Thady Gosdens of the world. And he proved it at the Breeders' Cup. I love to see, given that he always is he's brilliant with the press, very approachable, very generous with his time. But I love to see that sort of professionalism cracking in the closing stages when they had the camera on him and he was just going absolutely mad cheering home Gazora, and she was a very worthy winner as well. But yeah, he's clearly a trainer destined for the very, very top.
And he still strikes me as a trainer who's not as used to winning these big races as regularly as he is. So sometimes you speak to Aidan O'Brien and he's had so many that there's perhaps that you do go over some of the same ground. But with Francis Graffard, he's like a fan basically watching.
Yeah.
And when he likes his horses and when they win well, he is not afraid to really talk about them in glowing terms. I found that after the Champion Stakes, you just couldn't stop him rolling about how much he loved this horse and how just, yeah, he's a fantastic trainer, Liam, isn't he? And I think the same is true. It's not easy to have a winner at the Breeders' Cup. Aidan O'Brien's got one, Francis Graffard got one. Charlie Appleby seems to strike at this meeting with phenomenal regularity, winning with notable speech.
Yeah, I mean, and just on Charlie's record in North America as well, he targets the right races as well. He's been accustomed to winning at you know, these big meetings. I just think the race planning is so important. Like, if he knows that a horse has got a better chance of winning at this meeting than it has at, you know, say Ascot on Champions Day, then he'll favour going on the travels with this horse. And I think he proved that again, like Maddie said earlier, Rebel's Romance, although he didn't win, he's danced every dance there is, and he was unlucky not to win a hat trick of wins in that race. So I just think the level and consistency that Charlie Appleby's doing on a regular basis. Also still, you know, still a young trainer as well. I just think, again, he's one that will just keep climbing that ladder.
I think
it's amazing how we consider someone, I'm not sure how old Charlie is, but him young. Well,
yeah.
That speaks to the average age of trainers, doesn't it?
Well, I
know what you mean.
I just think, like, he's done it for so long and he just doesn't seem to have aged. So I just think that he can still continue to thrive at the top level. And Graffard as well, he, like you said, it's refreshing to see him kind of show that emotion he does when he's watching the races, because at the end of the day he is almost like a fan, because he's wanting his horses to win, obviously. But I think those races that you reeled off that he's won over the last few months, those are races that a trainer would love to have on the CV over a career span of 20-30 years, never mind in the space of 3 months. So I just think he's he's the next one to sort of stick it up to the big guns.
And on Appleby, El Cordobez, I think he's going to be the new nation's pride now. It was a great run from him as well, quietly under Billy Loughnane, who, talking about Dylan Brown, McMonagall and Coolmore and Ballydoyle, well, he's probably the next big rider for Godolphin, isn't he? So, yeah, I think we'll see him. I think he won the Sword Dancer earlier this year. We'll see him on his travels, I'm sure, El Cordobez.
It's interesting that Charlie Appleby, I think we made that 31 Grade 1 or Group 1 wins as a trainer in the US and Canada, which is more than he's had in Britain. He's increasingly, he had that sort of satellite operation. He's increasingly targeted North America, and it seems to be working.
It does. It doesn't always pay off, though. I know out in Woodbine, you know, some of his horses have been beaten at quite short odds recently, but Notable Speech was the exception to that. And I mean, he showed why, didn't he, with his electric turn of foot. They got the right positioning. And William Buick, I thought his interview afterwards was, again, you're talking about someone who's used to being in that position. And he still sort of, you could see that relief that was like, I'm either a hero or a villain on this horse. And thank God today I'm the hero. So that was brilliant. But yeah, Appleby, he's had the sort of the momentum of having a couple of 2000 Guineas winners, hasn't he? Not got that strength in the older horse division, Rebel's Romance aside, I don't think. But, you know, they're interestingly Godolphin investing a lot in Frankel. Now Dubawi's getting to the end of his reign. I think they sent an awful lot of mares to Frankel. So maybe that's their key to the future.
It's exciting times. I do have to apologise to all US listeners and viewers that we've left the Breeders' Cup Classic, the biggest race, right until the end. Forever Young, a first victory for Japan in that race. First of many, do we think?
Probably. I mean, he could stick around. He could come back next year. Third last year, ran a really gallant race, Saudi Cup winner. I mean, what a race that was when he beat Romantic Warrior. Just incredible. He'd won the Saudi Derby as well, beating some really strong horses, including Bentonato, who was a Breeders' Cup winner. It's just an incredible horse, and you've got to give kudos to Yoshita Yahagi, who loves travelling and loves the whole experience and really buys into it. I think the air miles this horse has racked up, you know, from whether it's at home in Japan, in Saudi, in the US. He's just an extraordinary athlete, and credit to the jockey as well, Ryusei Sakai. He's sort of grown in his role as being the main rider of this horse. He got some criticism after last year's ride, so great to see him, you know, silence the doubters on the big stage. And we see Japan just marching all over the world and dominating, and this was another step forward to that.
And you're a bit of an international racing connoisseur, so to speak. Is this a sign of things to come, the way that this horse has been campaigned out of Japan? It's almost, I was saying before we came on, a bit like prize fighting, just picking those really valuable targets and mapping it out globally now, as opposed to just staying at home, where the money is rather good in Japan, so it's quite compelling to stay at home.
It is, but there aren't the big dirt races there. And let's be honest, if you could create a racehorse and your aim was to make money, you would have made Forever Young, because the surface that he runs on and the distance that he runs on, they're all those hugely valuable races, you know, whether it's the Saudi Cup, the Breeders' Cup Classic. There's so many big prizes for him to win. And the Japanese don't tend to retire their horses prematurely. So hopefully we'll see him for several years to come. That's not going to be the case for so many of them in behind in that classic. Who knows whether we'll see Sovereignty again. I was just really gutted that he was withdrawn, but horse welfare comes first. But yeah, Japan, they're just a real force. And I think it's because they've dedicated so much of their time, energy, into doing things properly. I mean, you've been to Japan, you've seen how everything works over there, and the way that they train their horses, the way they campaign them, they race them. It's really with the sort of fan in mind and strengthening the bloodstock. And I think perhaps that's where they're overtaking us in some quarters.
No, absolutely. Japan, an example of a racing nation, certainly on the up. We go from Japan straight to Australia, and we have the small matter of the race that stops the nation, the Melbourne Cup, in the early hours of Tuesday morning. Here to give you the lowdown on the history of the great race is our audience editor, Gus Rowland.
I love the cup. Not this cup, it's the Melbourne Cup. It's the race that stops the nation. Well, two nations if you count the Kiwis. And you should always count the Kiwis. It's a race of stories, like the first winner in 1861, Archer. He walked the 500 miles from Nowra to Flemington, and he still had 2 miles to go. Well, that may be an old wives' tale, but the barb was stolen by bushrangers and then stood and delivered in the 1866 Cup. A little under 4 years later, William Craig dreamed that he'd win the Cup with his nimble foot, with a jockey wearing a black armband. The dream came true, but the armband was for him. He died in August. The Red Terror Farlap is still so popular, they made a movie and a video game out of it.
In fairness, it is a good film.
His death in America is still a mystery. Model Jean Shrimpton turned up to Flemington. The problem? It was 1965, and conservative Aussies could see her knees. 40 years later, and the first female jockey to win the race told the doubters to get stuffed. And they did doubt. The horse was 100-1. It's been won by strugglers, shakes and sanksters. In 1993, the first Northern Hemisphere trained horse won the Cup. Another shock, Irish tourists normally head to Sydney. So this Tuesday morning, chuck a breakfast prawn on the barbie, fire up the Racing Post app, because it's Cup Day and another amazing story is waiting to be written. Not here. Here.
And on the Melbourne Cup, let's get the fancies of the two people to my left. Liam, Al Riffer for you?
I think Al Riffer, yeah. I think he's just been campaigning brilliantly by Joseph O'Brien. Was an impressive winner in the Irish Ledger. I just think he can take it to the next step and win this one for the Irish.
With apologies to whoever's had $500,000 Australian dollars, that is Liam's selection. Maddie, who do you fancy?
I'm going for Maidan. He's drawn quite wide. I think he's drawn in 22, which might not be ideal, but I think that form has worked out really well from the September Stakes with Giovellotto running so well in the Arc, Calpana winning on Champions Day. Ran a quietly very interesting race in the Caulfield Cup, which is regularly a good trial for the Melbourne Cup. Just think he's going to relish the trip. He's got that great profile. The Australian handicapper even put him up as one to follow when the weights were released. Got great jockey. James McDonald, we trust him. Hopefully Maidan can do the business.
And is it absurd to think that
has
a good chance, given what we've just seen at the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he ran so well in the race last year, and we've had horses, you know, finish mid-pack in a Melbourne Cup, then come out and win it the next year without a fight. Speaking of Maidan, used to be trained by the Crisfords, ran a fine race for them, didn't really trouble the judge. I think that was probably due to the soft ground, and then went with new connections the next year, absolutely bolted up. So, yeah, perhaps. I think I want a bit more of an unexposed winner than him at this stage. I'd want to see a better horse win, but he's got the level of form that you need.
There you have it, a few selections for you for the Melbourne Cup. Before we end today's show, though, we will take a moment to remember Tommy Jakes, the talented apprentice who sadly died at the age of 19 last week. The thoughts of everybody at the Racing Post and indeed the wider racing community with all those who knew him and his family. All that's left for me to do is to say a big thank you for tuning in to the Front Page. A big thank you to my guests, Maddie Plale and Liam Head. Be sure to check out all of our coverage of the Melbourne Cup tomorrow morning, and thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.